Support for today's episode comes from Maple Leaf Foods. We all have questions about the food we cook. Is it natural? Is it good for my family? What about the planet? Maple Leaf's answer is in the foods they're proud to provide, with natural ingredients for Canadian families.
So my father made these very delicious fish cakes, and the beauty in it is that he could never actually describe to me how he makes them. He would kind of guess it in a way, but they were the tastiest fish cakes I've ever eaten.
That's Corey Snake. And today, well, we're finally going to get cooking. If you've been following the first two parts of Corey's story, you know just how hard it was to get to this episode. 100 years of colonization, outlawing traditional harvesting methods, and a global pandemic. But most importantly, Corey's dad died. He's the man who gave us the fish cake recipe. Today, we are back in Rama First Nation with Corey at his dad's old house, and we're finally going to make his dad's famous fish cakes. I can't wait. Hi, I'm Sarah Martin, and this is Home Cooked, a podcast about cherished family recipes and why they get passed on. Today, the conclusion of Corey and Kenton Snake's story, Kenton Snake's famous fish cakes.
So he would make them in a muffin tin and just make them often using fish, turnip, and fish that he gill netted in the lake. And yeah, it was just very tasty. So,
You said they were legendary.
Yeah, they were tasty, legendary. You just wanted to keep eating them when you ate them. They're very, very good. Yeah. In the community, everyone knows about them.
Remember awesome. Last time when, how are you?
Good.
Hi.
Good to see you.
How's it going? Oh, good. Normally for this show, I'll spend a day or two cooking with a family and interviewing them. But with Corey, those few days turned into months and then years. And now we're finally pulling it all together. We're back in Rama with Corey at his dad's old house. I stopped at the grocery store on my way up to get the list of ingredients for the fish cakes. I'm genuinely so excited to finally cook this dish. You've done so much work, eh?
Oh, so much. It was a little, yeah. It was
Corey has been renovating his dad's house for the past year.
Amazing.
Yeah, so I'm happy. Like, I just finished the siding last weekend. It's all coming together.
Ever since Kenton died.
Yeah, I went out spearing last Friday. What's today? Today's Saturday? Last Friday, I went out and got 3 pickerel just in Washago. Just quickly, I just popped in and looked and seen about 60 fish, and then I went to another spot and looked and seen 15 and got 3 quickly and then came home. But so the fish are in thick this year, so it's a good.
I set my groceries on the counter, and then I noticed a steamy container of pad thai sitting there. I'm confused because it's dinner time, and I thought we were going to cook straight away and eat his dad's fish cakes together.
So it's a good run, which is really good. And then it's probably the tail end of their run right now. So hopefully they're in. We just gotta wait till dark in the next like hour and a half. And
that's when they come out?
Yeah, go at nighttime. And then
my job is to listen. And Corey is talking about the weather and when it gets dark. And it slowly starts to dawn on me. As I stand here in his dad's kitchen, I realize that in some deep way, despite all these visits to the lakes and trails around here, fishing and hunting and harvesting with Corey, I haven't really been listening. In order to make the fish cakes, we actually have to fish.
There's a river. There's the Green River in Washago. There's a little dam where I go to. It's like just a water control dam, like not too big. And I go there and wait and go with my light and spot them out and go in and get them.
Corey is watching the weather on his phone. He's checking the temperature, the light, waiting for the right moment to head out.
When you're spearing, around 9, 10 o'clock, the temperature usually drops, and then sometimes a low fog sets in on the water. So when you use your light, the fog acts like as like an artificial cloud and like bounces your light from the water. So then it does give you an accurate like read of what's in the water. Like you might see a fish, but since it's distorted by the fog by the water, you can't get an accurate stab at the spear.
It's pretty cold tonight, right?
Yeah, it's chilly. If the wind stops, it should be too bad, and I think it will. Like I think it actually stops, so that's kind of good. That's okay. Pretty good, yeah.
What temperature is it?
Ooh, I don't know. Chilly.
I honestly don't know. River. The wind just stopped now?
It's been stopped for a bit, so it's going to... I looked at the weather earlier, so I was like, okay, tonight's going to work. Yeah. Once that... Yeah, it's going to be like glass. Because even if ripples, it distorts the light. You're just like... So it's ideal right now.
Okay, well, let's go.
So it's nice, yeah.
Let's do it. Now that the Williams Treaties have been resettled in Ontario, Indigenous people have their legal rights back to hunt and harvest food on their treaty lands. It's still pretty recent. The rules changed right before the pandemic. In part one of Corey's story, we talked about how generations here had to fish illegally at night and risk huge fines.
Getting all those rights back is kind of like, great, but we'd already been doing it. So it was kind of humorous to us, but it also, there was a sigh of relief because we knew we wouldn't be chased or have to duck. But it also brought another layer of fear, because now that we can do it more visibly, now people are going to see us do it more visible, and there's such a misunderstanding of the way we harvest that, you know, if I go and spearfish in daytime.
Corey has been going out on the land more since the Williams Treaties Agreement, by himself and with his students and at-risk youth groups. He uses the traditional methods he learned from his parents and grandparents to hunt, fish, and trap.
But yeah. What kind of reception do you get from people here? Do they know that you always spearfished here so you don't get any?
Some of them do, some of them don't. So if we're out here in a boat with our lights going, because we have to jacklight the fish, they'll come out and be like, what are you doing? Da da da. And you're like concentrating, like standing in a boat and like you have weight on you. And you're like, what? And then you have to explain yourself. And then some of them will voice their opinion, which is not needed, but it's never like, oh, great, amazing. It's always like, I'm going to call the cops on you, Indians, or something. Like, when they do go that route, it's not often. Most of them just stand and watch what we're doing.
And has anyone ever called the cops on you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%. Even coming to the creek, yeah. What are you doing in the bush with a light? And it's just like, we're spearing. What? No, you guys are going to break into a house. I'm like, why? No, we're not. Like, look at us. Like, I'm carrying a huge spear and a light. Like, what am I going to do? Spear through the door? I'm like, you know.
Tonight, we park in a dark spot near some train tracks just outside of what looks like an abandoned ghost town. I'm with my producer, Sean Liliani, and we're following Corey and his dog, Nene, walking down the tracks to get to the fishing spot.
Where are we right now?
We are on a set of train tracks just off Highway 11 North, outside the little hamlet of Washago. And we're heading kind of northwest right now. Heading towards the Severn River, and we're going to be spearing off a branch of a river that flows off the Trent Severn Waterway into Washago.
Are there trains on this track?
Sometimes.
It's kind of reminding me of like that Stand movie. Yeah. I was about to say Stand By Me, and then I'm
so
like,
there's the walk.
You back up there or get, what is all the other traffic? Okay.
What am I doing?
It's flatter if you walk right in the middle where the train goes.
You want me to walk right in the middle?
The other one. If you point in the light.
But then I don't get my audio.
They moved the train carts. We're there right now.
So you said you can smell the fish?
Yeah, sometimes there's a couple whiffs. So the indicators for spearing is when you hear the spring peepers. It's when you know the fish are spawning. So
what we just heard?
You can hear them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you looking for?
Glowing eyes. Their eyes glow gold and it gives a reflection, so that's how you spot them. And then you can make your move on them. I haven't seen any yet. Mm. This one looks like a young male. It's right there. See his eye glowing?
Yeah.
There's one there too. One over there. Yeah.
That's,
one there too.
Like zombies.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So I'm going to try for those shallow ones.
Oh
over
my
there.
God, they're like shining like diamonds in the water.
So that's deep. That's about 3 feet deep. So I got to watch my.
Yeah.
What I do.
Okay.
So, but I'm going to switch up my spear because the other one's lighter. And this one's kind of long. And this one's good for the deeper, but.
Yeah.
When they're shallower like that.
It's a
they
little.
Usually come along here.
Oh, that's a.
Muskrat.
It's a muskrat.
Oh, baby beaver.
It's a baby beaver.
Get out of here. So he'll
start
hitting
his tail. Is he
going to
start fishing?
He'll start scaring
fish. Oh, he's going to screw us over.
So he's curious. He's going to be annoying and start hitting his tail, though.
Shoot.
Get out of here.
Right there?
Yep. I was waiting for them to get close. Oh, there's one right there. One.
Yes!
That was funny. I turned the two of them right at my feet.
Oh my god.
Like, okay, then. So let me get one more.
Okay.
This will be good for like 6 portion fillets. I'll see if I can get one more and that's it.
Okay, then you go around the other side, John.
Young male falling on a big female.
Shoot. Oh my god, you got him!
Yep.
Holy crap.
I buried him in the mud, I didn't notice.
Oh gosh. Don't fall.
There's 3 of them there.
That's unbelievable.
Once I took the one, another one just came into that again.
Holy smokes.
Hey boy, get out of here, ding dong.
Upon closer examination of the fish, Corey thinks he might have caught a female by accident. Ideally, you do not want to do that in spawning season. You only want to catch males.
Right now is like the tail end of the season. So after this weekend, they probably won't be around. And we try to be selective as best we can. And then we try to get them on their way back out, essentially. So that's kind of the plan.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, no problem.
Up until now, it hadn't occurred to me that actually catching the fish was an integral part of this recipe. First you go fishing, then you clean and fillet your catch, and finally, in the wee hours of the night, you get cooking. It takes all night. We've caught 2 fish, and it's already midnight. Corey told me how when he was a kid, he was sometimes up until 2 a.m. cleaning and prepping the catch. On the drive back to Corey's dad's house, I felt so lucky that I had recorded Kenton's voice in the summer of 2019. He shared the recipe with us then, gave the instructions step by step. Corey and I had some time in the house before we headed out fishing that night. He told me about his dad and how hard it was losing him during the pandemic.
Yeah, he was already really sick. He hid it from everybody, you know. That's just like in our culture, that's what people do. We believe it's rude to be a burden to people when we call it being called home. So I said, you're battling something else. And he goes, no. And I said, yeah, whatever you have, it's getting worse. And I said, you have cancer? You have cancer in your lungs, don't you? And he didn't answer me. He wouldn't answer me. So one day when I went to his house, I was home, I went snooping through things. And found like all the documents that he was going down to see like specialists for cancer and lung cancer and things like that. So, but I didn't tell him that. I didn't tell him that I knew. And then finally we had that conversation and then then it opened up the door for more conversations about it and everything. So yeah, we'd sit down openly and talk about it. He'd show me around the house, here's where everything is, here's how this runs, or here's my tools, here's my chainsaws, here's what how you use them. This one's kind of finicky and like everything, and we made our peace together kind of thing and talked about everything.
The pandemic and Kenton's illness opened a door. Corey and Kenton were able to spend time together and talk about things they hadn't been able to share before.
I think the hardest part was trying to think about it more as a preparation and logical sense, not an emotional. I think that was a big thing. Like, okay, if I'm going to talk about it, what's the intent of it? Okay, to make peace. So don't let your emotions interfere with it and make peace with. Like, I've never seen him, I think I saw him cry once ever, maybe. And then he'd be, when we were talking, he would just sit there and like tear up and stuff like that. But it was strange because when he started his chemo, it's like he gained his energy back. So right before he passed away, he received his settlement from, he attended two different Indian day schools, and he got his settlement from the government from the abuse that he suffered at those schools. So he was in those systems from the age of like 5 all the way till he was 18. Yeah. He didn't mention a thing to me. I found out through his bank records. I was like, what's this lump sum from? And at this time, he was so sick, like his writing was almost not even legible. It was wild because through those documents, I found out, like, the only thing he ever mentioned to me about it was I went to drop out of university one time. And I told him I wanted to be an iron worker like him. And he said, don't do it. And he started to tear up. He said, you don't understand what you have. People like me never had a chance because we were taken away. And I had no clue he was even taken. Like, that generation locks that trauma down. They don't look at it. So I was like, oh, taken away. So I remember I went home and I was like, what did dad mean? He said he'd taken away. Oh yeah, he was taken away to day school. Like, he was adopted out to a Christian family for the high school portion of his day school. So I had no clue. And he said, I never had the opportunity you had. He goes, I'll never forgive those bastards for what they did to me. And that's the only thing he ever mentioned about it. So when I went through his documents, then I saw that he was a category 3, which means he suffered sexual and physical abuse while he was living with that family down in Kitchener. Not from the family, but from the administrators at the school. So there's steps to the process. So it's the same with the residential school settlements. So with the Indian Day School, they had people from the community that were trained to take those stories down that the person might feel comfortable with. And that made a big difference. So I didn't even know that process was happening. The document itself, it's like a sheet with instructions, and it says, like, you know, if you suffered this, you're a category 1. If you suffered this, you're a category 4. If you suffered confinement and, you know, anal penetration, you're a category 5. So it was like seeing these columns and seeing all these different check boxes, and then you had to add it up, and then you're like, okay, you're allowed this much of a settlement.
Corey was losing his dad to illness, and he was also gaining his dad all at once. But learning about his dad's abuse was devastating.
You know, he buried it away from his drinking. That was his thing.
What was your dad's favorite, or what was like kind of the best fish, ideally?
Pickerel, always pickerel. He loved pickerel. Yeah. He mainly ate pike, but his favorite was pickerel. Yeah. Yeah, I miss the taste of it. Like, now that he's passed on, yeah, I miss his fish cakes, which is weird. Not weird, but it's, yeah. You would never look at him and be like, oh, he's actually can cook well.
I'm Sarah Martin, and this is Home Cooked. After the break, reimagining the fish cakes with Kenton as our guide, in spirit. this is where we normally host an ad from our sponsor, Maple Leaf Foods. And we talk about something like how Maple Leaf Foods is the world's first major carbon neutral food company, or how they're Canada's largest provider of poultry raised without antibiotics. But we're not going to do that. Home Cooked is about food and family. And today in Canada, more and more families are struggling to access food. So today, we're going to use this ad spot to talk to Sarah Stern instead.
I'm Sarah Stern, and I'm the Executive Director of the Maple Leaf Center for Food Security.
Sarah, tell me if you can, what does being food insecure in Canada look like?
I think so often when people think of food insecurity, they think of the lines outside the food bank. And no one wants to be in that line. And I think when we talk to people and try to understand why are people who are food insecure not using a food bank, what is that barrier? Most people say it's not for me, it's for someone that's worse off. And so there's a bit of a barrier there on who needs it. If you're walking around a city right now, or even a community, you'll see the demographic of people in those lines are changing as they get longer. And when you speak to people at food banks, some of the biggest growing groups of people accessing food banks are those that are employed. People are having a hard time making ends meet. And the only piece of flexible income you really have is your food budget. And so that's what's getting pinched by everybody right now. And for some, it's meant having to turn to emergency food or the food bank to meet those needs.
Thanks, Sarah. Now back to the show.
So we're doing, this is a radio program, and the radio show is about family recipes and how they get passed on. So maybe we could just start.
I'm listening to the tape I recorded of Corey's dad 4 years ago when we were all sitting in his garage.
How did you learn to cook? Who taught you how to cook?
I guess my mother, really, just watching her. She taught me. But I've been on my own so long that you just learn. Yeah, you just learn.
Corey says you're a pretty good cook.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't cook. I'm not a gourmet or nothing. So you want to know about this fish?
Yeah, tell me.
You know the little muffin?
Kenton offered up the recipe that day. He was keen to share it. He told me to come back one day so that we could eat them together.
Yeah, it's great to have this place here. It's still very much characteristically his. Like, if you go in the backyard, you see, like, the outhouse he built that he really didn't need. Like, his bathroom's right there. Why would you build an outhouse equal distance from your fire? Like, you can just walk inside, use the bathroom, you know? Like, and then there's the grapevines everywhere, and you know, his fire pit and with his steel from his iron working and different things. So, yeah, it's still very much his thing.
We're in the garage again now. It's 1 a.m. With our two fresh pickerel in the bucket, we're getting ready to gut, clean, and fillet them.
So these are pickerel. We call them oga. So this would be ogawag, two pickerel. They're pickerels. So these are really sought after by our people to eat and always harvested in the springtime.
So yellow.
Yeah, very yellow. Oh, is this a male? Yeah, so that's sperm. That's sperm from a male. This is a large male. So if you ever got...
Corey let out a big sigh when he realized he'd caught two males. He had initially thought they were pregnant females because they were so fat. But they were actually just males full of sperm.
Cut open the belly at the center. Separate your fillets. So whole belly open. So that's all the sperm sac and everything.
Huge.
Yeah. So if you ever got a male with female, long ago in our community and still practiced up north, they would get a bucket and they'd cut the eggs out really quick and they would milk the male. And they'd mix the sperm and the eggs, and they'd try to get it back in the river under like a ledge as quick as possible. It's called milking the fish. So when I was a kid, the old women would come with the old men, and you'd see them, and they'd wait with pails. And when the fish would come out, that's the women would just go, whoop, whoop, and they'd start going, doing the whole milking process. Now you don't see that here anymore in my community. It's still practiced again up north, but it's just that's a dying art here. But yeah, that's a male fish sperm. So I'm happy. So that was a male following that bigger female around. So I was like, yay. So I purposely aimed for this one rather than the big female.
Corey gets straight to work. Seasoned hands, finding his marks on the fish, and expertly taking it apart.
And you landmark behind the first fin and behind the hard, it's hard here. So you go right where it's soft and you cut off the head of the fins. So there's all the insides. So with bigger picker like these, this is full of meat. Or people will cut the cheeks out like little like popcorn chicken. Yeah, this is a big male. Yeah, so that's the sperm. See that? See all that white milk there? And a lot of times you'll cut out the belly just to see. So then you cut into the anus.
Corey remembers the countless nights he did this with his dad.
It was good. We just had a system, turn on music and go at it. And I'd usually put out on when I had Facebook, like fish at my dad's, and people would just pull in, park, come to the back and be like, come have fish, here you go. Most of the stuff we netted, we gave away, like majority. And then we usually keep a quarter of what we got and split it between us two.
Do you do anything with the cheeks or the eyes or anything?
Sometimes I'll eat the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
People will pop them and eat them because it's like pure fish oil. That's like a really kind of old school thing that's not practiced much anymore. The cheeks, if I don't destroy them, I usually will keep them.
Mm-hmm. As Corey's working away on the fish, he manages to get one eyeball out and generously offers it to me to eat.
What did I miss?
I'm going to eat the eyeball. He's going to pop it out, and I'm going to eat it.
Oh, really?
I don't know if I can do it.
You just swallow it. It's
like, I don't know why I said yes.
Fatty acid pill.
It's like a fish pill.
Okay.
You take fish pills, I assume.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You have.
Except this one might make you vomit.
I know. Will it?
No, just don't think about it. Just literally pop and swallow it.
Okay.
Yeah? Just don't look at it.
You can do it. I can hear everything. Like, I can hear it.
There's that
ball. What do I do?
Just eat it. Swallow it.
I'm just trying to swallow it. But do I chew it?
No, swallow.
Drink? No. Oh my god. Can I borrow your drink?
Yes.
I just can't. Yeah, you can.
No, I can't. I'm really bad at swallowing. I forgot.
That was awesome.
Turn around, you have
some.
Swallow!
You got it? No, still no?
I did it.
Yeah,
I know,
right?
It's not a big deal.
No,
it was not a big deal. It's just, it's, I can't.
Because then I thought I had like a pill in my mouth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
Thank you for the eyeball. I really appreciate it. I do feel really lucky that I have the eyeball. Are you gonna have one too?
No.
Some.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
there,
fishy.
Right?
Here. Houston.
He never catches food and throws it to him. Just takes it out of the nose.
It's disappointing. You're supposed to catch your dog.
It's getting close to 2 in the morning, and with the fish finally cleaned and filleted, we're ready to move to the kitchen.
All right. So I just wash the fish fillets, 2 fillets, portion size, and have put them in the pot, and I'm now heating them up to boil on the stove in water.
Beautiful.
So traditionally our people always boiled meat. Like, there's a myth that indigenous people would cook meat on a fire all the time. We'd smoke meat for preservation and mix it with other things like blueberries and different things, or maple sugar and things like that. And make like pemmican is a big term that's usually heard for that. So we create like power bars filled with everything. But with fish, our people a lot of times would boil fish to eat because it was softer on the stomach, less inflammation. Like, our people just knew that. But also our people would make like fish head soup and stuff. That was huge with certain types of fish.
The last time I was here, you said that you always try to make your dad's fish cakes, and they don't always come out the way he did.
They just don't taste the same. You know how your parents make something, and it's like, I want that flavor when you're away or something? And you make it, and it's just not the same. Like, there's something.
Because he didn't make it for you?
Yeah, or something, right? Yeah, so I'm hoping it turns out that way. Yeah, so when I was staying here when the house was almost finished and I was doing the finishing touches, the top and lights would turn on in here. So, like, we're Ojibwe people are very spiritual people. Like, we believe in life after death. There's different forms of spirit. So there's, like, your physical spirit, and then there's spirits that dwell on the earth and spirits that go to the spirit world. And after your spirit's done its physical experience, it can exist in those different areas. It wouldn't be uncommon when I had my kids here. My daughters actually noticed it. We're all laying in bed one night, and she said, oh, the light turned on. And it was the living room light, and that's only via remote. Like, the light turned on, then, like, 2 minutes later, the fan turned on. And it was at, like, 3 a.m. So we're like, okay. Like, there's no switch. It's pure remote. And then the taps turned on, like the kitchen tap turned on and different things. And my kids were like, who's that? I'm like, that's his grandpa. And,
Do you feel like he's maybe hanging around for you?
I don't know. Maybe to see how the house turns out or what to do with it. Yeah. So it was a thing even when I was a kid, like being at my grandmother's house, I distinctly remember her cooking and the TV turned on and she said something in Ojibwe about it. I said, what did you say, Nokmus? And she said, oh, I told the spirit, quit fooling around. And so it's like, we just grow up with that. Like, it's like a thing. We call it being called home because we believe we exist in another realm before we come to the physical realm. Like, there's only a continuation of life, like a transfer of souls to another world. So now he's still in existence, just not in physical form. And not in the physical realm, he's in the spirit world as a spirit.
Before coming up here tonight, I asked Corey if we should make the recipe using the audio instructions from his dad from before the pandemic.
I wouldn't mind listening to it right now. Yeah, it'd be good.
Would it be good?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to hear this?
I think I got it.
Yeah, sure. I think I got it. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know the little muffin trays you can get? You got like 12 in there or something, or 6. Okay, well, you take your fish, any kind of fish will do. I think white fish or
pike. And you boil it. Not whole, really hard. Just, and then you depot it, and then take the water off. And then let it cool, sit down, and take every bone out of that fish by hand. So now you got pure fish meat. Okay? And it's still kind of warm, you know? So then you add 2 eggs, oatmeal, raw onion, diced fine. Mix it all up, toss it up. Maybe a bit of flour too if it's damp. Just put some flour around there in there, sprinkle it on, you know, mix it in. So it's all mixed. And you put it in your muffin trays.
Oh, grease the muffin trays first. So they don't sit writing this down now.
I'm going to write it down.
And you grease the muffin holes. And then put it in the oven. In about 20 minutes, it's done. 350.
What's your favorite fish?
Geez, I don't know. Perch, probably. That's the best. Mm-hmm. But no, I like everything. Whitefish, pike, bass. I don't think bass is my favorite. Whitefish or pike, perch. Perch are nice, really nice.
Kenton is right. The fish is still warm as we make the fish cake batter. It's that fresh.
So we'll have to get a mixing bowl of sorts, and we'll have to add the fish, yes, eggs, and the potato, and then we'll throw in the rolled oats with it, And then roll it in flour after.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think you made a version. We're all getting tired and we've built up an appetite. But there's a strange adrenaline to this night, knowing everything that came before, going out to catch the fish before actually getting to the baking. And there's something really special about listening to Kenton's voice here in his kitchen. As Corey pulls the muffin tin out of the oven, our mouths are watering with anticipation.
It tastes like a hash brown?
Yeah, it tastes like a kind of like a hash brown. It's really good.
What
yeah.
did you do with the potatoes? You boil
Can
them
I,
and mash them up? Or?
Yeah, and then you mix it in with the fish and add your egg. And then your oats, and then you bake it up.
Can I taste it?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Should I just use the fork or cut off a little bit?
You should bite yeah. that into it.
Bite it's, right
it's warm.
Into
it's still
it.
Really warm.
Oh my god, it's so warm.
Just bite a nib off there.
Mmm. Mmm.
Right?
Yeah. Those are really good.
What do you like better, the ass or the eye?
Doing this, we're always being watched by something we can't see. Like, that's our understanding of it. When we're spearing, there's spirits everywhere. And when we go out on the water, we're actually in territory of spirits. So our people have always understood that connection in a deep sense. Yeah, it's always been important to me. Like, my family's known as people that fish, so it's just integral to everything. Like, my family and our identity.
When I first came to Rama several years ago, I felt baffled that Canada had such a significant historic site right here in Ontario, the Minjikining Fish Weirs. I'd never even learned about it in school. Meeting Mark, Corey, his mom Cheryl, his dad Kenton, Mark's sister Sherry, and learning what they've all had to go through to keep their culture and identity alive, it's staggering. Mark Douglas says this place was always rooted in love.
Imagine 400 to 600 families all showing up, all with their own little space, place. It was a lot of work. So people would come and help me, and then when I finished all mine, I'd go and help them. And it was what they call like a barn-raising attitude, the laughing and the teasing and the cajoling and the... But the harmony, everybody working together. And if you and I had been disagreeing and fighting, and we openly were not being kind to one another, everyone else would ask us to leave. Their fear of us fighting would destroy the atmosphere, and the fish would sense this. They're very sensitive individuals, and they would know we're fighting and would stay away from them. And I happened to love that type of story. It talked about who we were as a people, and we've been doing it for so long. And we were known as the people from Minjikining, and Minjikining is the ancient name of that place and how special it was. And we were the caretakers of it.
I think awareness is growing and growing and growing. And one thing that I'd like to see is positive stories growing as much as the negative.
Mark's sister, Sherry.
We dream of the day when UNESCO comes and puts up a big metal sign at the Weirs and says, you're now a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Then people will come from all over the world and know that we were here.
I never thought I'd see it in my lifetime. Like, I never thought I'd see non-Indigenous people caring about Indigenous people, like, the way things are in my whole lifetime, just because of my experience of growing up. Like in my mind, I'd already built an idea that there's no possible way forward.
I couldn't have told this story in this way without the openness and generosity of Corey Snake and his family, without Kijik Douglas, his dad Mark, and their family,
I hope you've enjoyed making these fish cakes. It's a special recipe. And a very special thanks to Kenton Snake for sharing it with us.
Nothing beats like an elder's look on their face when you bring them food they haven't eaten in forever.
But I still got some in the fridge there. Before you leave, I'll give you a frozen piece.
Thanks for listening. If you want to make Corey's dad's fish cakes, head over to homecookedpodcast.com to learn how. You'll also see images by portrait photographer Rita Leisner. This episode of Home Cooked was produced by Lisa Gabriel, Katie McGuire, Vanessa Connolly, Sean Liliani, Nicole Edwards, and me. Cameron McIver does sound design. Sean Liliani and Stefan Banjevich composed original music for this episode. Artist Charlotte Fisick created our downloadable recipe cards. Candace Craig does graphic and web design. Composers Dan Misha Goldman and Sean Brody wrote our theme music. Sean Liliani is video producer. And a very special thanks to Corey Snake. Until next time.